the first is the meditation, because then the mind being fixed on the deity, then after that, if you worship. Otherwise, you could be thinking about what's happening for lunch today and then start the puja and still be thinking about lunch when you're offering everything. And so then what's the point? But when you have to do a meditation, the mind actually has to stop thinking about lunch and just think about the deity. So you'll see in all these, Guru Puja, Gauranga Puja, and Radha Krishna Puja, there's always a meditation first. But in Guru Gauranga Puja, then it's always, everything's simpler, the puja, everything. And in Radha Krishna, it's a little bit more elaborate. There's more prayers and more details. But otherwise, there's going to always be, as a general rule, a meditation, the 16 items themselves, then prayers, chanting of Gayatri, and prayers. So that's going to be the system how everything goes. So there's the preliminary activities, which is the meditation. There's the main puja, which is going to be the 16 items. And then after that, then there's going to be chanting of the Gayatri. There's going to be chanting of specific prayers for that deity. And, you know, that concludes the activities. So in this way, meditate on sitting near Sri Gurudev and perform worship by offering the 16 items while chanting the appropriate mantra. So in Guru and Gauranga, then the 16 items is pretty straightforward, you know, not much extra. And in for Radha and Krishna, then a few extra ones are added in. Idam Asanam Om Gurve Namaha Swagatam Suswagatam Om Gurve Namaha. Asanam means the seat. Swagatam is greeting. Etat Padyam Om Gurve Namaha. Idam Argyam Om Gurve Namaha. Idam Achmanayam Om Gurve Namaha. Esha Marupakaha Om Gurve Namaha. Idam punarachmaniyam om gurave nama. Idam snaniyam om gurave nama. Idam sotariya vastram om gurave nama. Because sota means sa utariya vastram, means clothes with upper and lower cloth. Imani abaranani om gurave nama. Esha gandaha om gurave nama. Etani pushpani om gurave nama. Esha dupaha om gurave nama. Esha dipaha om gurave nama. Idam naivedyam om gurave nama. Idam paniyam paniya jalam om gurave nama. In other words, something to eat and drink. Idam punarachmaniyam, after you eat, you clean some mouth. And idam sarvam om gurave nama. Sarvam means anything else that could be offered and nice and everything like that. After offering these articles, once you chant the Guru Gayatri Mantra, you know, for those who have second initiation, chant that 10 times. After that, obeisances to the Guru by chanting Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. Then after, offer obeisances to the Vaishnavas by chanting Vancha Kalpatarubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They are just like desire trees who can fulfill the desires of everyone, and they are full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. Right? So then now that Guru Puja is finished, now we go on to Gauranga Puja. Now, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, now one should worship Lord Gauranga, who is complete as the Panchatattva. Meditate on Lord Gauranga with this mantra. Sriman Mautika Dhamma Bhadha Chikuram Su Smera Chandrananam Sri Kanda Guru Charuchitra Vasanam Shragdivya Bhushan Chitam Nritya Vesha Rasan Umoda Madhuram Kandarpa Veshojvalam Chaitanyam Kanaka Dutam Nija Janai Sevyamanam Paje. I worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is being served by all his devotees and associates, whose hair is bound with strings of pearl and whose moon-like face bears the nectar of his gentle smile. His beautiful golden body is adorned with lovely garments, anointed with sandalwood and aguru pulp, and bedecked with garlands and various glistening ornaments. He is absorbed in enjoying the sweet mellows of dancing, and his charm is more splendid than even Cupid's. So meditating that way then, worship of Gauranga, Idam Asanam Om Gauraya Namaha Swagatam Suswagatam Om Gauraya Namaha Etat Padyam Om Gauraya Namaha Idam Argyam Om Gauraya Namaha Idam Achmaniyam Om Gauraya Namaha Eshamaru Parkaha Om Gauraya Namaha Idam Punarachmaniyam Om Gauraya Namaha Idam Snaniyam Om Gauraya Namaha Idam Sotariya Vastram Om Goraya Namaha Imani Abharanani Om Goraya Namaha Esha Gandaha Om Goraya Namaha Etani Pushpani Om Goraya Namaha Esha Dupaha Om Goraya Namaha Esha Dipaha Om Goraya Namaha Idam Naivedyam Om Goraya Namaha Idam Paniya Jalam Om Goraya Namaha Idam Punarachminiyam Om Goraya Namaha Idam Sarvam Om Goraya Namaha. Then, having finished the Gaura Puja, then chant the Gauranga Gayatri Mantra. And then one should offer obeisances to Gaurasundara with this mantra. Ananda Lila Maya Vigrahaya Hemabha Divya Chavi Sundaraya Tasmai Maha Prema Rasa Pradaya Chaitanya Chandraya Namo Namaste. O Sri Chaitanya Chandra, I offer you my repeated obeisances. You are the personification of Krishna's blissful pastimes. And you are our extraordinarily beautiful, having a dazzling golden luster. You have awarded the people of the world the topmost mellows of ecstatic love for Krishna. I think this is from the, Chaitanya Chandra Astakam. Okay, and so that finishes the worship with Lord Chaitanya. So with Guru and Gauranga, then you don't need to offer the specific articles. It's just all done with the water and the Achman cup like that. And if you do want to, you know, you do have flowers of this, you can always put. But the point is these things are just, these are preliminary to the Radha Krishna worship. So then you're doing it more simple. Then with the Radha Krishna worship, if you don't have things, you can just offer water. But otherwise, you have all the paraphernalia, that's when you'd be offering it all. Radha Krishna Puja. Worship Sri Sri Radha Krishna while thinking that one is engaged in such activity by the mercy of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So we're not just doing the worship on our own, we're doing the worship as servants of Guru and Gauranga. Begin by meditation on Vrindavan with the following mantra. Tato Vrindavanam Jayat Paramananda Vardhanam Kalindi Jalakalola Sangi Maruta Sevitam Nana Pushpa Lata Bhadha Vriksha Sandhais Chamanditam Ratna Taurana Gopuram Manikyat Chadananvitam Koti Surya Samabhasham Vimuktam Sattarangakaihi Tanmadye Ratna Kachitam Swarna Simhasanam Mahat. Vrindavan Dham is an abode of ever-increasing joy. Cool breezes and the Yamuna's waters enhance the atmosphere. And all directions resound with the humming of bumblebees. Vrindavan is decorated with wish-fulfilling trees embraced by many varieties of flower-bearing creepers. There, a temple shines with the splendor of millions of suns and is eternally free from the six waves of material miseries. Within it sits a great golden gem-inlaid throne. In this way, one should meditate on Sri Vrindavan Dham, the divine realm of the Supreme Lord. That's from Gautamiya Tantra, verse 4. Next, meditate on Radha and Krishna sitting on a golden throne studded with jewels with the mantra. Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumara, Srimad Ratnagara Simhasanastav, Shishi Radha Srila Govinda Devau, Prashtalibhi Sevimano Smarami. In a temple of jewels in Vrindavan underneath the desire tree, Shishi Radha Govinda, served by the most confidential associates, sit upon an effulgent throne. I meditate upon them. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 1:16. Offer worship with 16 items while chanting the mantras. Idam Asanam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Swagatam Suswagatam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Itad Padyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Argyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Achmaniyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Esha Marupakaha Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Esha Idam Punarachmaniyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Snaniyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Sotariya Vastram Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Imani Avaranani Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Esha Gandaha Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Etani Pushpani Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Sachanda Talasi Patram Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha. So that's the one, that one is more with Radha Krishna, because then you're offering tulsi leaves and everything like that with Chanda. Esha Dupaha Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Esha Dipaha Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha Idam Naivedyam Om Radha Krishnabhyam Namaha idam paniya jalam om radha krishna bhyam namaha idam punarachmaniyam om radha krishna bhyam namaha. Now two more are also put in. Ime malye radha krishna om radha krishna bhyam namaha. Now there's a garland. Idam tambulam om radha krishna bhyam namaha. Then idam sarvam om radha krishna bhyam namaha. Then finishing, then you chant the Gopal and Kama Gayatris. Then offer obeisances to Krishna. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Banto Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate. My dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer obeisances unto you. Then offer obeisances to Sri Radha. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye. I offer my respects to Radharani, whose bodily complexion is like molten gold, and who is the queen of Vrindavan. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, and you are very dear to Lord Krishna. Then with feelings of distress, read Padyapanchaka and Vigyaptipanchaka. Padyapanchaka. So these are then prayers as concluding the puja. Samsara sagaran nata putra mitra grihaganat. Goptarao me yuvam eva prapana maya bhanjanao. Yoham mamasti yatkinchit ihaloke paratracha. Tat sarvam pavato dyaiva charaneshu samarpitam. Aham apyaparadhanam alayas chaktisarana. Agatis chatato natau bhavantau me paragatihi. Tavasmi radhika nata karmana manasagira. Krishna kante tavaivasmi yuvam eva gatir mama. Sharanam vam prapannosmi karuna nikara karau. Prasadam kuru dasyambho mai dushte paradhini. O Radha Krishna, you are my protectors from the ocean of material nations, which is filled with sons, friends, household, and land. Therefore, you are known as the destroyers of fear for those who are surrendered unto you. O your lordships, myself and whatever little bit is mine in this world and in the next, all this I now offer unto your lotus feet. O your lordships, I am certainly the abode of many offenses and am completely devoid of any devotional practices, nor do I have any resort or shelter. Therefore, I regard you as my ultimate goal. I am yours, O Lord of Srimati Radharani, as are my actions, minds, and words. O Srimati Radharani, lover of Krishna, I belong to you alone. O Radha and Krishna, O ocean of mercy, you are my only shelter, and thus I take shelter of you. Although I am such a fallen offender, please be merciful to me and make me your servant. Vigyapti Panchaka. Matsamo nasti papatma. Na paradhi chakaschana, parihare pilajame kimbruve purushottama. Yuvatinam yata yuni, yunam cha yuvatao yata. Mano bhiramate tadvan, mano me ramatam tayi. Bhumau skalita paranam, bhumir eva valambanam. Twai jata paradhanam, tvam eva sharanam prapo. Govinda valabhe radhe, Pratyaye tvam aham sada. Tvariyam iti janatu govindo mam tvaya saha. Radhe brindavanadi she karuna mrita vahini kripaya nijapadabja dasyam mahyam pradiyatam. O Purushottama, no sinner or offender is as bad as I am. How can I describe my shame? Just as the minds of young ladies take pleasure in a young man, and the minds of young men take pleasure in a young woman, kindly let my mind take pleasure in you alone. Just as the ground is the only support for those whose feet have slipped, you alone are the only shelter for those who have offended you. O Srimati Radharani, beloved of Lord Govinda, this is my request. May you and Lord Govinda consider me one of your assistants. O Srimati Radharani, O Queen of Vrindavan, you are a river flowing with the nectar of mercy. Please be kind to me and give me a little service at your lotus feet. Then, okay, so that finishes the worship with Radha and Krishna. Then afterwards, then you do the final ending that you, the remnants from their worship, then you're worshiping, offering to the the Lord's guru and the Lord's associates. So then, you know, whatever is left from the puja, the maha, then that's offered then. So idam maha prasadam nirmal yadikam, om gurave namaha, om sarva shaki bhyo namaha, om shri purnamasyai namaha, om sarva vrajavasi bhyo namaha, om sarva vaishnave bhyo namaha. And that ends the puja. Then jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shri vasudeva gaur bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hari Bol.
Thank you, Maharaj. Some of the devotees are asking for the name of the book. Can you, if you tell me, I can put it in the chat so that they get it.
That's... Yeah, but whatever they get won't look like this.
No.
Ksam Shepa Archan Padati. If you have the in one printing of the Bhajan Rahasya in English, it's in the very back, like an appendix.
Ananda Chandrika had a question.
Okay.
Hi.
Can you hear me properly?
Yes.
Okay. I have actually three questions, if it is possible.
Three,
yeah.
Okay.
When we say, when we offer the 16 item, and we, the last is that idam sarvam, we all kinds of things. During the puja, what is proper to offer them? I mean, is it, I mean, and what kind of things you can offer to them? Like,
no,
like
just idam sarvam is on its own. It's not that it's opening for them just keeping on going. It just means any other nice things that weren't there that we didn't have that we would like to offer that, you know, we could offer. It just means everything, you know, just like that. It's not that there's an item offered with idam sarvam.
Okay. So we don't have to meditate on anything, just on that's whatever.
Just that whatever nice things more that we would want to do, we can do. I mean, you can if you want to sit there and meditate on all kinds of stuff, you can. But the Idam Sarvam just is a final that, and anything else we could offer. You know, I offer you all this and anything else that I could possibly.
Okay, thank you.
You know, it's not that you're physically going through an offering there.
Okay, thank you. And my second question is that when we say this prayer that Om Swastino Govinda Swastino Achitanando, we're holding a petal with the chandan and ringing the bell and saying few mantras, and then we throw it behind our back, this petal with the chandan, we throw it behind our back. Why we need this petal and why we put it, I mean, throw it behind or back.
Mm-hmm. That I'm not sure what's that, where that's coming from specifically. You do have that when you're doing a sankalpa. I know when we're doing the yajnas and that, then it's part of the sankalpa. And so because of the sankalpa, then you're throwing something. Generally, it would be akshata, which is the dry white rice mixed with some turmeric. You put, you know, turmeric in a little bit of water and just mix it so it's enough that it turns it yellow. And then that akshata, that's what would be thrown. It's just thrown over your head like that. So that could be from there, but because they don't have akshata or this or that, they have flowers, so they're using a flower petal and throwing that. But it's not that I know especially over the left shoulder, it's just, it goes behind you. But it's part of that. So if it's part of, you've done some preliminary activities where you're committing yourself to that this is what you're going to do, then, then it would, that's what it's for.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
But it's not that by doing that, then, you know, mothers-in-law won't bother you or the, you know, how you say the tax collectors won't come or, you know, it's not, no, it's just part of It's just part of that determination to do the puja for Krishna nicely.
Uh-huh. Thank you. And my third question would be that when we offer the arti and we offer these five elements, the one who...
You're offering nice things.
Uh-huh.
For those who take the material energy as the source of everything, they want to take everything back to those original sources. So therefore, the tantrics always take this is earth, this is water, this is fire, this is air, this is ether, because they have these five offerings like that, the flowers, this, that. So they have all these things that they take back in that. So it's a very complex, you know, subtle thing in their minds. For us, we're not offering the five elements.
Okay.
We're offering lamps. They're nice. Lamp is niranjana. It's for removing inauspicious things like that. Flowers are nice. They're for the, you know, they look nice. They smell like this. Argya, that's a point of respect that we're offering like this. You know, the fans and that, it's not a matter we're offering air and creating a pleasant breeze for the Lord. The chamara keeps away the bugs and it also gives a nice little thing. So therefore, we don't need to take it down to this kind of thing. We tend to do this because of the, scientific background in reductionism, that you have to take it down to, if I say, oh, it's just nice stuff, but why do we do that? Oh, this is earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Oh, okay. You know, it's just like, why do we have a sika on the back of our head? You know, because Krishna likes it and all that. You know, I don't understand. No, it protects the Brahmaranda, you know, like that, because you have the chakras there and it keeps that and all that. Oh, okay, then it's okay. So this is the problem because of this reductionist mentality. We always have to take it down to the lowest common denominator, then only it makes sense to us. The point is these are just nice things that Krishna likes. That's why they're offered. So once you get down the tantrics and the shaktas and that, they may look at it like this, but I doubt that that's what the Mother Yashoda and the gopis are doing in Braj.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right? Krishna comes back from the fields, so Mother Yashoda offers them a lamp, niranjana, to remove any inauspicious things of, you know, being out there and people seeing, or because the demons and all this and that. She's not thinking, yes, so now I'm offering the element fire to Krishna, and that then will purify all this, and then the fire, that's the movement of the body and all that, and, you know, and so like this, and then it's combined with the air because the air pushes on that. No, she doesn't do that. It's just nice stuff. That's what we're offering, nice stuff to Krishna. These are the 16 nice stuff that Krishna likes.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Right? And in Vrindavan, these 16 items are also worshipped. They may not be formal like this, because in the Pancharatra, it's formalized because we don't have that natural rati towards Krishna. But they do offer all the 16 items.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Is that
so
all right?
Much. Yeah,
yes.
Really. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
This is my own.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I just have a question whether this first procedure in the worship which you described includes if we are worshipping Shri Gornitai deities, or there is something extra which should be added?
No, it just means you would go up to the point of Lord Chaitanya and then stop there. You know, this is for if you're doing all three. If you're only worshipping Guru, you only go up to that part. So the point is that you're approaching the main deity. So you're going through Guru and then Gauranga, then to Radha Krishna. If you're only worshiping Gornitai, then you go up to you'll approach the Guru and then worship Gornitai. So the padati then is a basic fundament for doing that. And then these other aspects then are added in, because then, you know, as worshippers of Radha and Krishna, then we would be doing these. But if you're doing the puja for Gornitai, then you just stop at that point of Lord Chaitanya. You know, so then you can do that for Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, or put it together as a mantra together, like Radha Krishna Pyam. So then, I'm not sure what would be the the Sanskrit for putting the two corny tie together. But... is that okay? So in other words, we're keeping it, it's not, the puja is what it is, but our approach to it, we're not making it complicated. It's not that the ritual itself is what's making the bhakti happening. No, we're using the ritual to express bhakti. Right? You know, it's just like if someone's a cook, they use the pots and pans to express cooking. You know, but otherwise someone may think, no, it's the pot and pan and the spoon. That's what makes cooking. But pots and pans on their own haven't cooked anything in a million years. Does that make sense? So the thing is they're there. So we don't complicate them. We don't try to add to them that's more bhakti. No, it's just, it's the devotion in which you offer it. So we have a very complete system. And so then it's used. It's not that sometimes it's thought, oh, we have such a simple system, and like the Shris and Madhvas, they have a much more elaborate developed system. Actually, theirs is simpler than ours. But they repeat it over and over and over and over again, and that's what gives it that seemingly bigger volume of worship. But their individual items and that they do and how they do it, like installing things and that, is much simpler than us. They don't get into such complications. They just do it, you know, 10 times, that's all. Does that make sense? So there's no need to add. I mean, this is for home worship, it's simpler. If you're in the temple and that, especially if you're worshiping Shaligram, then they'll tend to do more on the preliminary aspects of the puja, you know, the installing of different things and all that kind of stuff, and that's done whatever you're doing in the temple. The idea is Bhaktivinoda, of course, giving a very simple thing that everybody can do at home. Then if you're used to doing puja and there's certain aspects that you really like, you can add to this. But the idea is this is the essential, the core things. You'd want to avoid dropping this, any of these. You can add to these, don't remove these. Does that make sense? But if you're, let's say we're going to tie, then the Vigyapti Panchaka, that you wouldn't be offering to them, you know, because that's for Radha and Krishna. If you're worshiping Nrisingadev, also those last part for Radha, you wouldn't be offering. But then, you know, Nrisingadev, you'd ask that, put in the Tulsi Patra like that, the Malye, you can add those. Whoever's the main deity, you can add those. As long as they're Vishnu Tattva. Does that make sense?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
We have a question here. Could you please explain the reason why Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this book, he puts Om, like Om Gurave Namaha, and at least in our script, we use I'm at the start. So could you please explain why he puts this... The beginning of the mantra is different.
Because generally speaking, you don't necessarily write down publicly your bija syllables and things like that that you're initiated into. So someone who's second initiated, then they would put the guru, you know, how you say that mantra there. Does that make sense? Yes. Also the same for Lord Chaitanya. You know, put in the Guru Bija, you put in the Kam Bija, like that. So you just change it like that. Also, someone who's not second initiated, they wouldn't be chanting the Gayatri.
Yeah.
Right? So they would just skip that and move to the next part. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But this is something anybody could do, ideally that they've been second initiated. But if not, they can do anyway, but just, you can only use the mantras that you've been initiated into. So therefore, unless you've got second initiation, then the guru beach syllable, the Gauranga beach syllable, and the Krishna beach syllable, you don't have those. So that's why Om is there. Does that make sense?
So it's not necessarily only for those who are second initiated, but it's broader in that sense.
It's for home worship. Yeah. I mean, ideally, it means in the previous time, first and second were together.
Yeah.
because it was just considered one aspect of initiation. Because generally speaking, if someone came looking for a guru and
Marge, I don't know if you can hear us, but you've frozen.
Right? Are we still there, or you've all disappeared?
Now we have you
or
back.
You froze
for a little while. Can you hear me, Marge?
Nobody's saying anything.
Okay.
Still says it's recording.
Can you hear me now?
Hasn't come back yet. Hello, hello. Hello. Okay, you can hear. Okay, that's what he wanted to know. Say, so then they would have the that initiation then would be together. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, what he talked about, they took the same single initiation and just divided it into two halves, which we call first and second. But it's five items, five aspects of diksha that we do the first three with first initiation, the last two with the second. So until you've gotten those last two, where you get the specific pancharatrik gayatris and mula mantras and bijas, then you don't use them in the puja because they won't have the potency. So it's just not done. So generally speaking, most people would be. That's why they would have deities and stuff like that. But, you know, in our society, it's just, as, you know, if you visit Loy Bazaar, then one of the, you know, strict rules that you must do is buy deities. Why? I have no idea. And ideally Radha and Krishna. Because maybe eventually one day that I would worship. So that means when they get back and get off the plane, go to their house, then they get them out of the box and start worship. So, because of this element where just so freely everybody has deities and they're not satisfied just having pictures and stuff like that. Because pictures are one of the eight deities, but everybody has the idea that unless it's an Archamurti, that it's not actually a deity. What we can see is even in the mind, you could do this, you have no deities. You just do this in your mind. You just say this out loud, go through it like I went through it, and direct your attention towards, you know, towards remembering Guru, Gauranga, and Radha and Krishna, and you can still use it. Or you could have a picture altar and then do the puja like that. And deities, generally, you would only have if you were second initiated. But nowadays, I would say a lot of people who aren't second initiated or first initiated have deities. So you use it across a wider range. At the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, no one would have deities unless they were initiated. So, does that make sense?
Yes, thank you very much.
Maharaj, internet is low and we can what? I can only. Okay, so that's all we have is there. Okay, so we can't ask questions or do anything like that. And I'm waiting for the current to go back on. Otherwise, I can't read anything. So the whole idea is the pancharatrik process is to create a regulated environment and we are going to connect ourselves nicely with the deities. Because the tendency is that we'll just do things when we feel like it. There's not necessarily this sense of duty or sense of obligation that you might find. Okay, logging out.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna.
Okay, we have you back. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. We were talking before and he had questions, so.
Yes.
Happy with those points?
Yes, thank you. We heard the answer. It's still, the internet was still pretty much okay, so the answer came through nicely. Thank you.
Okay. Does that make sense? So in other words, we're applying it. See, we tend to be too strict where it's not necessary and too liberal where we're supposed to be strict. So somehow or another, like worship of deities, worship of shaligrams, this and that, these are stuff that are generally, it's careful to approach such a position and to take up such a service. But we take it up as that it's like popcorn or something, you know, you're going to watch a movie, you have popcorn. So if we're going to have a house, you've got to have deities. And if it's going to be deities, it's got to be Arjuna. And if it's going to be Arjuna, it's got to be Radha and Krishna. Where do you get them? Boy, bizarre. Haribo. Yeah. Like that. So, you know, so then we've made up these things. So place where we're supposed to be strict and we're not. Then we say, okay, this is simple puja. No, but what about this? We didn't do this. You know, that's the thing. Where if we can make it simple, we make it complicated. Where it actually is supposed to be, you know, it's quite a sophisticated thing. We'll try to make it, oh no, it doesn't matter. We just chant. You know, so depending upon our particular position, then we tend to, instead of just taking what the acharyas say is wherever we feel like it should be more strict or like that, then we say, oh no, it's got to be like this. And where we don't really like it or not into it, then, oh, we chant Hare Krishna. We don't care for the rules. So we have this really interesting switch between the two. So the idea is that by following the acharyas, you know, the pancharatric system, then we start to become balanced. It starts to become straightforward. And then we're able to apply that balanced view on, you know, all aspects of our life and that, because we see everything connected to Krishna. That's the important point, is the connection with Krishna, not the perfection of the ritual. It doesn't mean we don't do the ritual nicely, because we're doing it for Krishna, but we're doing it nicely for Krishna because we want to please Krishna. Not that we're doing nicely because then only we get the benefit. No, we're trying to do it nicely so Krishna's happy. Krishna's happy. That's perfection. Not, I did the ritual perfectly, therefore I should get the perfect result. That's karma. Or I did the ritual perfectly, therefore I'll get freed from material entanglement. There'll be no karma, so therefore I get liberation. That's jnana. I do the ritual perfectly to please Krishna. I'm just trying to please him. That's bhakti. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, very good.
And also we had one question about diksha. So,
diksha.
Yeah. Is it also then that diksha is also there because it's meant for the conditioned souls, the liberated souls do not necessarily need to be involved?
No, everybody's involved in diksha. It's just, what does it comprise of? In other words, liberated souls can take advantage of just the Bhagavat diksha. But if your condition means us, in other words, if you've taken birth in the material world and you're not one of the acharyas, then you use the pancharatric process. You know what I'm saying? You know, so if anybody's come down here from the spiritual realm as just playing the part of the pastime of an ordinary devotee just to, you know, help push forward the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then you don't have to worry about the comment. But generally you'll see that they all follow the process. Did Krishna not take initiation? What about Lord Chaitanya? You know, like that. Ramachandra, like this. All the acharyas, did they take it? So it's something that's what you do. Because the point is it's the same principle. It's just formalized. Because otherwise, if it's up to us, see, the Bhagavad is you accept someone's teachings as your life and soul, you're connected. Like the six Goswamis, they had the discussions with Lord Chaitanya. So Prabhupada very regularly makes the point that the six Goswamis are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya. Because being on the liberated platform, accepting the instructions as your life and soul, therefore then they're initiated. For us, it won't work like that, because this moment, that sentiment is there, we feel like that, but tomorrow morning we have a different idea. In fact, tomorrow morning we would think, well, actually, I'd rather have this guy as a guru, right? And then that's going great. He's smiling and doing all the things. Then he tells us, hey, you got to get it together. Then, okay, then he's not our man. That one over there, because he's smiling, so he's my new guru. That's what would happen with us. Therefore, Pancharatra, you're sitting there. The program is there. Everybody's there. You got initiation. They all know what your name is. They all know who your guru is. They all know the date you got initiated. So you can't claim, yes, no, he's been around for 10 years, but you know, hey, I'm the disciple of, you know, I've been here for the last 40 years. It says, no, you weren't. You got initiated when I did. That was 12 years ago. You know, so, you know, it just avoids all kinds of problems. So without a ritual, we don't think something's happened. You know, it's just like, you know, you say, okay, you have six gurus and like this and that. And it's a regular question. So is there a ritual that, you know, I want you to be my six guru. So is there some ritual? No, you just follow the instructions. That's all. You're just inspired by the instructions. It's kind of like, okay, you know, but, you know, couldn't we have a little ritual? You know? So that's the difficulty, is that because of ritual, because we're used to the idea religion means there's an activity that gives a pious result. Right? I go to the church, I pray that my kid will pass their exams, and then the kid passes the exams and I'm happy. You know, or, you know, before going to bed, pray that, you know, Uncle Milbert, you know, will, you know, be okay, and he won't, you know, he'll get over the difficulty he's having. And then in the morning, you know, or after a few days, then, you know, Uncle Milbert's okay. And so then we're happy. But there's a ritual. So that's the whole point, is therefore the conditioned soul, they require religion. Say whatever you want. We chant Hare Krishna, this and that. But we're chanting because we're told to chant. We're saying, oh, we chant, we don't care for the rules because the Shastra says that. Right? An empty pot doesn't make any noise. I mean, an empty pot makes lots of noise. A full pot doesn't. So people who are just absorbed in Krishna and they're not following the rules because they're absorbed in Krishna, they don't say it. Did you ever hear Haridas Thakur say it? No. So that's the whole point. But we always say it. So all we're doing is saying it for things that we don't care about. Or sometimes where someone's overemphasizing something, and so we want to point out that no, bhakti is the main thing. So then for that individual, we'll say, hey, we chant. We don't care about these rules. It's not about the rules. So, you know, you might find a senior devotee use that, but they're trying to change your focus from thinking that bhakti is a ritualistic process into understanding it's a devotional process. The rituals are the same. Just like if I'm cooking down for the local, you know, restaurant down around the corner, you know, it's a karmi place, or I cook the same preparation at home or in the temple and offer it to Krishna, the recipe is the same, the technique's the same, nothing changes. So that's the whole point, is all the activities recommended in the Veda that we're using in bhakti are originally from bhakti. Just that karma and jnana won't work without bhakti because there isn't anything else. So in other words, pious activities are simply the activities you should be doing in bhakti, but you're not doing them in bhakti. That's what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to close the curtains again because now the laborers are coming around and I don't need them staring in my windows. Okay. Ja.
Hare Krishna. Jai. Hare. I'm afraid.
The teapot.
The teapot?
Is that the teapot making that squeaking sound?
No, probably the bugs in the garden.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that loud. Okay. Oh, crickets. Okay. You got crickets.
Something. Birds. Maybe birds. I think they are. Okay. These are the birds. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I'm afraid.
Your question.
Yes.
You're
I have
afraid.
A question. I'm afraid.
You're afraid.
Yes.
The big I'm bad afraid. Wolf. What?
That I'm going to drag this sublime topic down to the earth.
A little earth. Bit.
Down to earth, yes. Down to my level.
No, but that Bhumi Devi is a potency of the Lord. She's a devotee of the Lord. So then you're trying to connect things to how we're engaging the facilities around us connected to Krishna.
Yes. Or, yeah, maybe my question will be useful for preachers, because it's kind of, it's a situation that can arise among devotees. So my question is that the program and the process you are outlining, you outlined on the first day and today also, is very sublime, and it's very regulated. It sounds to me like a monastic program, because it's a program of constant engagement, constant meditation. It's turned towards, completely towards, it's directed towards the spiritual, and it's very like one-pointed, ekagra. It's a constant meditation, and that's what we are supposed to do. It's very sublime, but after many years, we may find that we are not so sublime, that we are more passionate. And it was not by chance that we came to the movement already married. We are not so much inclined to this pure way of life, of constant meditation. And then suddenly something happens and it says, start again, because, well, we... So we find ourselves on point zero, and because it's above the so-called Maslow pyramid, and we find that we are still in the first tier of the Maslow pyramid, and so
the point is, bhakti is never lost, so there's no question of starting over. It can just be more aware of what you're doing, but bhakti never starts over again. Of course, that's a very popular way of looking at it, especially if we want to use corporate models for doing things and all that. But we have to remember, corporate models are for making money, not for running a spiritual organization. Not that you can't learn something from them, but you should always understand that the corporate model as it is highly, highly deficient in addressing the devotional, platform. So now, okay, let us take, you have a person, they get up in the morning, you know, they have to get up at a certain time, because then they have to take their bath, they gotta, you know, eat something, they gotta get, you know, in whatever transportation they have to get to work at a particular time, they have to focus on their work at a certain time, they leave, they catch their you know, whatever it is, their transport home. They get to their home. When they get home, then there's certain things they're going to do there. You know, there's going to be some interaction with the family. There's going to be eating dinner. There's going to be sitting around and doing something, you know, that to cultivate your vegetableness, you know, like that of just, you know, doing nothing. And then they're going to go to bed at a basic certain time, because they got to get up at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No? Now, yes. Within that, they're going to get up and they're going to go into the bathroom. They're going to use the toilet. They're going to brush their teeth. And in brushing the teeth, they're going to brush their teeth in whatever way the dentist said, either in the circles they're going to do, or, you know, up and down strokes. And don't do it more than 2 minutes or you wear off the enamel, right? And then what are they going to use? Are they going to use anything? No, they're going to use some very specific toothpaste and all that, depending on what, if their philosophy is organic, then it's got to be an organic thing. If it's more about sensitive teeth, they're going to use a sensitive toothpaste. If it's more about brightening, they're going to use a brightening toothpaste. Are we starting to catch the gist here?
Yes.
So in other words, this idea of putting into, that's monastic. Everybody follows, anybody who's successful follows rules and regulations, and they're very strict about it, very, very regular. And they're getting up, I'm going to work, so they're doing all these things. So the meditation is there. All we're doing is adjusting it so Krishna's the center.
Mm-hmm.
So to say it's monastic and then everybody else is just being practical, we're in the real world, so therefore we can't follow all those things, that's just a red herring. That's just trying to pull, create an illusion in people's minds that it doesn't apply. Everybody's getting up in the morning. everybody's going to the toilet and using the, and doing this and that and shaving and whatever it is, you know, like that. And then they're going to eat something, and that's going to be according to their idea of a diet. What do you eat for breakfast? Depends on your philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it vegan? Is it vegetarian? You know, is it organic? You know, is it, you know, sustainable? Is it, did you grow it in your backyard? People have these and they're very strict. They're sitting right in the middle of the city and they're only eating, you know, some very specific things. They go to big trouble to get that. But because they see it as their own benefit and karma, that's why they're endeavoring. So the whole idea is that yes, by passion, then because we get the benefit, we see doing this. And because we don't understand the benefits we're getting, then we take it that the Shuddha-Sattvic lifestyle that's been recommended, that it's the same form. It's just now it's been, you're doing it to please Krishna. You're taking it back because you please Krishna, not because you're going to smell good and all the girls are going to like you and you're going to get laid tonight. Mm-hmm. That means the guys that go out, the guys that are playboys, are they not very strict about how they dress, their hygiene, how they do everything? Very pukka. What? Because they, and everything is, this is the way they're dressing and going bad is what the, is for the men or it's for the women. So they're trying to please the women. So the way the suit, the this, the what they're going to smell, how they shave. The men that have a stubble on the face, they got their beard in their hand, their gut sticking out, you know, you know, and they're fine. But it's being done to please the women. So they're going to very, very great detail in everything. What they say, how they do it, their lines, where they go. You know, everything is that. Take them out to dinner, but where to dinner? They take them to McDonald's? No. There's a whole thing. So everyone's following some kind of ritual. Everyone's following these things. And they're being very regular.
Mm-hmm.
All that we're saying is put Krishna in there. You're brushing your teeth for Krishna. You're getting up for Krishna. You're going to bed for Krishna. You're eating for Krishna. You know, you're dressing for Krishna. That's the difference. So it's not a monastic life. It's human life. Pancharatra is human life. Monastic life just means it's the same human life, but instead of getting out of a fancy bed with, you know, 1,000 count bed sheets, you know, you're getting up off of, you know, one of those yoga mats on the floor and kind of rolling it up and sticking it in the locker. That's the difference. But both are sleeping on something.
Mm-hmm.
They're both taking a bath. Maybe one's taking a bath in one of those showers that has the rain shower and all those, you know, massage jets and all that kind of thing. It sets the temperature like that. Okay, I want it at 36 degrees and all that, where the other guy's just, you know, out of the tap, pouring, filling up a bucket of water and pouring it over his head. So it's just the particular facilities, but that you're regulating your life and doing all that. And within that, you're going to be getting up the hygiene. You're going to be, chanting some mantras and all that. You're going to be taking your breakfast. You're going to be doing your occupation during the day. You're going to be spending time with the family. This is all regulation that the Vedas give. And so if you follow that, you'd be successful. Just like, let's say we have people who, you have dharma, artha, and kama, right? That we're dealing with in the general situation. So now you'll find you have to balance these three. So some people will give up dharma for artha, but ultimately how does that work out for them? You know, remember before, if you go back in history, you had guys that, you know, maybe were born poor. They became rich. They stayed rich. They're rich. Their son's rich, their grandson's rich, right? So it used to be, if you go back some years, you talked about rich people, they'd been rich for some time, and they still are rich. But nowadays, you don't hear about rich people. Just, you know that there's a class of people who are rich, but today you're rich, tomorrow you're poor. The whole economy is moving at such a pace that there's no stability at all. You know, people that are smarter and are regulated and follow the laws connected with economics have a better chance of you know, keeping afloat. So that means anybody who's successful follows regulation. Anybody who's successful performs their work, and at the moment of working, they're not looking to enjoy the results. They're controlling the senses. They're acting without that sense of detachment. Once they get the result, then you see they're a karmi or a jnani, but or a bhakta. The bhakta gets the result, he offers it to Krishna. Karmi gets the result, it's for him. The jnani doesn't get a result because he doesn't want one and he wants liberation. So this idea is that, oh, it's so different and this and that. That's because we see so externally that if there's a difference, okay, he has a purple yoga mat and I got a pink yoga mat. And so then, you know, we can't do the same asanas. It's so different. I mean, it's completely different. I mean, it's just like, you know, opposite ends of the universe and all that. Now what are we going to do? But the yoga mat's a yoga mat. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So the whole point is these are just standard things you're doing anyway. It's just a matter of remembering Krishna while you're doing it. That's all. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not monastic. This is what any human being would do. Monastery just means there's no furniture. That's all. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only difference. Does that work?
Yes, it does.
You don't have to, you have to understand this is, it's sublime, but that's the whole point. If everything is Krishna, that means everything can be connected to Krishna. That means all times and places and circumstances, you can be devotional and connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole point. Sublime is all pervading. The gross is just right there. You know, that couch is at your house. It's not sitting next door. But the sublime, the principle of a couch, that you'll find in practically every house on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a principle of couchness, right? And so that you'll find everywhere. And so that's why we go for the sublime, because it always works. And if we just take a regional thing, this and that, then it works or doesn't work. You know, and even regional, then I'm sure that, let's say your family cooks some goulash, right? But let's say we go to another family, they're going to cook it differently. And in fact, they may even go to the point of saying what your family cooks is not actually real goulash. And that's in your city. Then you have another city. You know, and then you have the Hungarians that are there in America and how they cook it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, it's just, you know, so as far as the karmas that go, there is no one doing the right thing or doing that, you know. Does that make sense? So yes. That's why the Vedic system is so perfect. It's something that everybody can do. Because there's principles and you apply those principles. So you have big facility, you use big facility for doing your facility, your activities. You have very minimal, you use very minimal. It's so perfect that way. Everybody can fit into it. Whatever your ashram, whatever your varna, it fits into the system. While in the modern, it's, you know, if you're a business person, the other three don't fit. They're just facilities, there's cogs in the machine of economics. They're not people. Your workers aren't people. The government's not people. The teachers and that aren't people. They're just people that they're just living, they're just entities that help you get done, make your profit.
Mm-hmm.
For the government, they just control everything. For the shooters, then they do their thing. But in the Vedic, everybody works together. It's one entity. It's one body. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
That's the perfection of the Vedic system is that it, is able to accommodate all living entities, you know, in the whole system. Even the birds and the bees and the animals are all accommodated in the system. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So therefore it is a universal system. It's not that, oh, that's India. You can do that in India. No, it can be done anywhere because the example is you have people come from India and move to every country that there is on the planet and every single one of them is materially successful. I mean, just like across the board. You know, They go to school, any university anywhere in the world, they get top marks. They go out and get a job. They do the best there is. They decide that they're going to buy a house. They actually own a house. They don't have to mortgage for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason they'd mortgage is because they want to invest that money somewhere else to you know, increase their money. And so they're successful and they're following, you know, to some degree, the Vedic principles. So this idea is, oh, that's just for India. That's for people who haven't really analyzed what's going on, aren't really seeing what's actually happening. Like that. You know, it's like in America, in Texas, right? You don't get more kind of yeehaw American than Texas, right? Yeehaw, you know, like cowboys.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Cowboys on the horse. Yeah. Yeehaw, yeah, like that. You know, it's just like that is American. You know, like, you know, chewing your tobacco, giving you spit, got your 10-gallon hat, the whole thing. Okay, when they were having trouble, they've been trying to build a temple there in Houston now for a long, long time. They can never get it together, right? So all these Texans can't get it together. Who actually organizes this, builds it, and pays for it? Indians.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's the point. The Vedic culture works every, because it's human. Subhuman cultures, yes, that just works in that one particular little place. You know, so the Huna culture works there, the Kirata culture works here, the Sabara works over there, you know, like this and that. And so it doesn't work in the other place. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so, yeah, you can follow it there and everybody's happy. You know? I mean, Hungary, you could technically say is a Western country, but they eat tons of chili. You know, but Westerners will say, oh, we're Westerners, we don't eat chili. There's kind of like half the planet that's within the tropics and that kind of like that eats chili. Doesn't matter where it is on the planet. You know, oh, we're in America, we can't eat chili. From south of the Rio Grande, or even from Texas on down, they eat tons of chili. In fact, there's a famous Tex-Mex preparation called chili. That's the name, and it's supposed to be hot. And you got these regular old ordinary Americans talking about, yeah, I made my chili the other day. You know, you got to make it hot and things like that. And then people say, oh, we're Westerners. We can't eat chili. I was really surprised. Maybe last year or year before, I found out, you know, you've heard of Tabasco sauce?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of all over the world. Tabasco sauce is an American company that has been there since, I think, the 1860s.
Mm-hmm.
So that means Americans have been eating chili, you know, for the last couple of hundred years. But someone who didn't, oh, we're Westerners, we can't eat chili, so we can't eat this Indian food. Okay, so that means you don't eat Mexican either, right? Or you don't eat Szechuan cooking or anything else that's got chili in it. But they'll happily go to a Mexican restaurant or a Chinese restaurant or this or that where they might have chili. Then it's all right because it's Mexican. Because we eat that. But I never grew up eating in an Indian restaurant, right? You know, unless I was in London or something. And then curry, that's the thing to eat. And curry's supposed to be hot. You know what I'm saying? So we have to appreciate that sometimes we put so much emphasis on these secondary external applications and then say is, oh, there it's different, so I can't do that. You know? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the whole idea is that, no, this is just a regulation for the life that anybody can do. Like this padati that I just read there, anybody can do it. You know, a few days you learn, you know, you get comfortable with it. A couple of weeks, then you memorize the mantras. You know, and the whole thing, you saw, I read through the whole thing. So if you add in.
Maharaj, if you can hear us, you've frozen. He said he's just waiting for the electricity to come back. He's not seeming to be able to connect without the electricity on. It doesn't normally take too long because in Mayapur he has the generator access. So it just sometimes takes a few minutes for the generator to come up. Ah, here he is. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay. Current game back on.
Okay. Let's try again. Shall we continue to the next question?
Is she happy with what we said, or?
Yes, I'm very happy.
Okay.
So.
Okay, you're not upset that I might have presented Guyash in the improper
no.
light.
Okay. Not at all. Not at all. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hare
Krishna. So I can start in a simpler level and then elaborate it as I can to the.
Yeah. It just, the whole point is the life is regulated in this way. It just brings it closer to Krishna. You start with what you can and then do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the point is to remember Krishna. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah? Thank you very
Good.
Much. Hare Krishna, yes.
And offer the Guyash to Krishna.
Okay. No problem.
The dragons.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
You actually answered our question just before, so it was partly connected to Prema's question.
Okay.
About how to connect everything in our lives, in our everyday lives, every day. So. Sometimes it seems to be difficult to see this opportunity when you have a busy schedule, you're doing things, you're not associating with devotees, so you're trying to see everything through this angle. So
in those cases, you're busy, but what's the ultimate purpose of that activity? It gets a result. What's the result going to be for? So then seeing the result for Krishna, that connects everything before that for Krishna. Now, if you can be conscious of Krishna all through the whole process, that, of course, is the best. But if not, at least you're conscious of Krishna at the end when the result is attained. So then that's for Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know. So let's say you're cleaning that house, but you're focusing on making it nice and clean. But the purpose, the ultimate point of keeping it clean is because it's nice for Krishna. Krishna likes the house clean. He's very clean. He's the supreme pure, so everything's clean. So then at the end, then it's at least it's given to Krishna. If you can remember Krishna all throughout, that's even nicer. But if not, at least the result that I'm cleaning the house to please Krishna, and at the end, then you offer that to Krishna. Right? Same with the job. It gets money. So the money is then used for in connection with Krishna. Or the money maintains you, and then you engage in Krishna service. So then, like that, some way connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that, like, let's say every evening when we finish our day, we just do a little meditation or prayer to offer everything that we did?
Yes. I mean, it's a natural part of the Pancharatrik process is that especially, it means it can be any time, but especially if not, at least when you go to bed, then you offer everything, whatever you've done during the day. And if you do that, you'll find that you go through everything and you actually analyze the quality of it. You know, you go through and, okay, I want to offer everything, so I did this, but this, okay, I could have been this, I could have done this like that. So, you know, within 30 seconds, you kind of like analyze your whole day and see everything, and then you might have... Then you have that determination, okay, tomorrow we'll try to be more focused and more Krishna conscious. And then you get up in the morning and pray that today I do everything to please you. And then like that, you open the day, close the day like that. And then in between, you do the best you can.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Ah, Crick is back.
Can you hear us?
We can.
Yes, we can hear.
Sorry, we are new on this Zoom, so we have no idea how to use it properly. So one question is about mantras, meditation and prayer mantras when we are worshiping Giriraj. Should they be the same as for Radha Krishna or?
Yes, yes, because he's Krishna. Means this puja that we just mentioned here, it would be exactly the same if you're worshiping Giriraj. So if you're worshiping deities of Radha Krishna like that, you're worshiping Giriraj, it'd be exactly the same thing. Because the point is Krishna is always with Radharani. So Giriraj is always with Radharani. It's not that she's not there. We may see, we may not see, but she's there.
But can we add also some mantras for glorification of Giriraj, like Diskantaya Madre Rabala?
If you want to ask some, you can throw them in. Why not? The point is this is a basic that by doing it, it's complete in itself. And then if you want to add more to that, why not? You know, it's like you cook the preparation. It's nice on its own. Then if you garnish it with, you know, put some parsley on top or drizzle a little mustard, olive oil on top, it just gets better. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's fine. Why not?
Okay. And the other question is about when there is this public abhishek of the deities.
Yes.
And also I read in Shivaram Maharaja's books about Abhishek of Radharani when she was crowned as a queen of Vrindavana. I don't really understand what is going on there. Like being...
In an Abhishek.
Yeah.
You're having a nice bath.
But it looks uncomfortable that everybody is looking at you and... It looks uncomfortable that everybody is looking at you and it's...
Let's say you go out and buy yourself the latest Ferrari car.
Okay.
And you drive down the street, you go into, you know, some nice, you know, down the main street where, you know, all the nice shopping is, or into, you know, one of the parking lots there. Would you be comfortable if absolutely no one looked at you?
I guess not. Yes.
Yeah. So then the point is they're the source of everything. Everything's connected to them. So what's the problem? These are devotees. Yes, maybe while you're taking bath, you wouldn't want the whole temple there standing around chanting and cheering and Haribol and like that. And you get out the bar of soap and they all go, Haribol, you know, like that. Yeah, you don't want to avoid that. But here, everybody's devotees. Everybody's following Srimati Radharani. So then what's the problem? That's why you make it as nice as possible, as pleasant as possible. And you have people that know how to do the Abhishek. You don't just have everybody come up there because they feel like it. So those who do nicely, then they bathe, they pour nicely. You know, you keep it open so everybody can see nicely. Not that you have all those ecstasy wallahs that stand right in front of the deities because they're getting the mercy and seeing Radharani, but no one else can see. You know, all that kind of, you adjust all that so that everybody can see nicely, and then it's a nice festival. So it's her mercy that she's willing to have her bath there so you can watch. So take it that just how fortunate we are.
But is it pleasurable for her?
Why wouldn't it be? Do you think Krishna would allow it if it's not?
Yeah.
And generally when you bathe Radharani, you bathe Krishna also. Like when we have Janmashtami, Radha Madhava come out. And when you have Radhastami, Radha Madhava come out. So she's always with Krishna. Why would she be there alone?
No, I was just judging from my condition, the worldview, that if I would be painted like that, it would not be comfortable for me. Therefore, I was thinking about...
Yeah, but you're not Radharani either. So then,
yeah, fortunately.
You wouldn't be happy six offerings and artiques a day either. You know, you wouldn't be happy with all those ornaments and all that clothes and everything like that. And, you know, so, you know. They are who they are, and we are who we are. That's why we don't have, that's the nice thing. We don't have to have a public abhishek, right? We just do our service and all that, and keep that humble attitude, and we're good. And Radharani and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his consort, and so then they're cool also.
But is that the standard bath they are taking also when they are not in public eye? Like regularly they are bathed like that by their attendants?
It's simpler. It's simpler. It's simpler. Much of the procedure is the same, but it's simpler. You just water or like that generally. And depending on what material they're made from, then they may be polished. So they might use some tealock or some almond paste or, you know, things like that.
No,
but that's also part of the regular bathing.
I don't mean the deities, but Radha Krishna, in Vrindavan.
Why Radharani doesn't take a bath?
No, but is it also like that with all these substances, yogurt and this and that and honey and...
It just depends on it. An Abhishek is a special bath. Mm-hmm. And then their daily bath, that'll be more simple. So that means that there's daily things, nitya, and then there's naimittik. That's what goes on in the spiritual world. It means Mother Jashoda doesn't every day have Krishna's birthday. So she just has a special program once a year for his birthday. So on that day, there's something special. You see, I think it's in the Krishna book where Balaram's, someone's telling, maybe Rohini or Mother Jashoda is telling Balaram to bring Krishna back early today because it's his birthday. So they have things to do. They have special programs. Because otherwise, they generally go out and stay with the cows all day. But she's saying bring him back early.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
First, I would like to ask that, could you explain the 8 type of deities?
The 8 type of deities.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know, you have 5 of them, you want to get the other 3.
I have 2.
You want to be exact which is the other 6 so you can make them arrange.
Not just to know.
Means you're going to have the archer that we know about, right? So that means the archer can be in metal, it can be in stone, it can be in jewels.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Or wood. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can have the deity in water, you know, like the water pots that we have for, you know, yajnas and stuff, then you put deities in that pot with the water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So all those pots that sit around, you know, the ceremony, those are also, you know, you can install deities there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So those are deities. So they have to be treated like a deity. That means when the yajna is over, the kids shouldn't grab the coconut off the top because that's their head. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, so they'd be respectful, right? You know, they're just seeing it as something to eat, but it's their head.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so you wait till after, until they've left, then you take the coconut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you have sand, you know, like you go down to the beach and make and all that, and then the waves wash away. That's sand. Then you have painting. Right? Painting, pictures.
Okay.
You know, painting, photograph, you know, like that, you know, it's been printed. It's a picture, 2D, right? So in other words, you have the arches as 3D, right? Sand is 3D, like that, or it's actually relief work, it's not completely 3D.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Thank you. And if, for example, I read the Pancharatra Pradipa and
right.
I try to study and explain on my life, this means I'm following the Pancharatrika system?
Yes, but even the devotees who don't know what Pancharatra is and haven't read Pancharatra Pradeep, in ISKCON, the lifestyle is Pancharatric.
Uh-huh.
Because you see, Abhigamana, you get up in the morning, you off your basis, fix the bed, you go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, take a bath, get dressed, they wear neck beads, they wear tilak, they wear Brahmin threads, like that, they go to the temple, they ring the bell, offer obeisances like that, and then take darshan of the deities, there's Mangalartik, like that, Tulsi Artik, they sit and chant their japa, you know, there's darshan Artik, they take Charinamrita, they circumambulate the deities, they take the shad. This is all Pancharatra.
Mm-hmm. So
the lifestyle we follow is Pancharatra.
Uh-huh. Okay, so if I'm just live like a normal devotee,
you're following Pancharatra.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's just that if you understand it, you may be more attentive to it and understand how it's all part of the system. Otherwise, the tendency is that we'll think when I'm at the temple, now I'm doing stuff, but when I'm at home, I'm not. They're still at home. Mm-hmm. Even in the Pancharatra, after breakfast, that's the time for your work. So whether your work's in the temple or whether it's outside as a job, the point is it's still part of the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like that.
Thank you. And could you speak about a little about encouragement? Because, for example, if we want that a lot of people following it live like a normal devotee. And one type of encouragement when everybody is really pushy and really hard with the others. And another type is that they are so nice and kind, but that's it. So what is the real encouragement in our life?
Setting example and talking about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. So they know why they're doing it, how it connects to Krishna, how, you know, it will bring them forward, help them move forward in Krishna consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Because the point is, just being nice, that doesn't mean they'll be a devotee. And just being heavy doesn't mean they'll be a devotee. Because otherwise, being nice, that means, you know, in every commune and everything like that, and wherever, you know, the Rainbow Festival and all these things, everybody there, you know, would all be devotees. And if we go down to, you know, all the people distributing, you know, mosquito nets to all those poor kids in Africa, they'd all be devotees, right? No. Mm-hmm. Or if we were talking about just being strict and all that, that itself would make it, then, you know, everybody in the military would be devotees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only the association in which we're hearing and chanting about the name, form, qualities of and pastime of Krishna. That's where devotees are made. Now, depending upon the situation, the individual, you may be more nice, you may be more strict. It just depends upon which is working at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Okay. So sometimes you use both. Prabhupada says thunderbolt and rose.
Uh-huh.
But the person who's successful can do both. If you can only do thunderbolt or only do rose, that means you'll only partly be successful. You have to be able to do both. And generally balanced. How much thunderbolt, that much rose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes.
So you're explaining, you're teaching. In other words, teaching is the best inspiration.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay. Hari Bob.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Joy.
Joy.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. First of all, let me thank you for your mercy these days, that some things helped me to put Pancharatta and the perspective of the whole system. Now I'm wondering that in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Srila Prabhupada is translating the word by word in, of the verse Tat Viti Pranipatana, he's very interestingly translating the word Tat at that knowledge about different sacrifices, which he explained before. And then my understanding is that this should be the role of spiritual authority, not because today many devotees are simply confused when we are preaching about varnasham duties. Practically, sometimes we see that very often the word duties today even mentioned in the leaders' presentations. We have so many retreats and this kind of programs, but and then devotees are thinking that spiritual life means going to do, as you said yesterday, utsava, to the festival, and that's spiritual life. But the daily life, there's nothing with the spiritual life, just tapasya of this material world. So there is no systematic education, mostly there is no culture, external culture to support. So my question is, if you want to help devotees stay in the movement and get the proper understanding of these things, what would be the best thing to do to be part of Prabhupada's mission, his idea to establish this on a more, because he said Prabhupada wanted quality and quantity, but we are now struggling with both. So what is your suggestion? You explained to the matter, you said that personal example is very important thing, but if you want to do things on a more larger scale or a little bigger scale, what is your suggestion? What we can do?
I mean, it's the same thing as that personal example is going to be there, because if you yourself aren't inspired by it, how you'll inspire others, right? So you study Prabhupada's books, you're inspired, then you find various opportunities in which you can discuss about Krishna to different groups of persons, smaller or bigger or whatever it is. It's just a matter of making opportunity. See, the difficulty comes up is there's this misnomer or this foolish idea that corporate structure and management's going to make ISKCON great again. But the point is it never will. It never has, and it's not working now. Because corporate is about profit, not about people. So it's actually a bad system. This strategic planning aspect, you can use that, but not from the corporate model, because it's not from the corporate, right? So you have to use it from higher models, because if you use the administration or use education, then it's about qualities, it's about character, and that corporate is not about character. So everybody's just out to get profit for themselves. Why? Because then sense gratification. So the point is artha comes from dharma. So if you're not performing your duties, you're not going to get any results. You know, it means you'll get whatever there is from the past, but you may not catch it because people don't think that they're getting it. So it has to be is that, you know, like Lord Chaitanya said, whoever you see, whoever you meet, you discuss about Krishna. So there's plenty of opportunities. Prabhupada's given so many forums in which we can do these things. It's just that it has to be inspiring. It means you talk about the devotional service, like you see more and more people coming around. They're looking for something. This idea is that I'm going to take elements from the material world and I'm going to present that and people will be inspired. They're already in the material world. That's why they come to Krishna consciousness. So unless you can present it from how Krishna consciously it works, then who's going to be inspired? So that's why you understand it, you practice it, then you can figure out ways to show others. So you have the temple programs, you have home programs, you have all these other kind of programs, whatever you can have, you know, people can have in their houses, you know, regularly go around and do programs in different people's houses, and they invite the friends in that area, right? City's quite big, everyone's hard to get together, but the few devotees here and there, wherever they are, anybody around them, then they can come to a program there, and the next day you do another. Like in Chaupati, I think they do, you know, the weekdays, they go out to programs. And the weekends, then they have at the temple. So on the weekends, everyone comes to the temple. And the weekdays, the devotees from the temple go out to the community. You know, communities, schools, these kind of things like that. Does that make sense? So we have all the operational elements that are there Prabhupada's given us. You know, we have temples, we have book distribution, college programs, restaurants, farms, community development, you know, the GBC, you know, all these different things we have. So then it's just a matter of using them. And if we're convinced, then we can inspire others. But if we're not convinced, then it'll be slower. Does that make sense? And so each individual can see what areas that they are most inspired in and then try to work in those areas. And that way, if everybody's trying to do something, then things get happen. You know, but that's why the philosophy is there. How to see Krishna in everything at all times, all places, all circumstances. But people say, oh, the philosophy is just theory. But that theory is, that is how you can actually see, how you can connect. Just like if you're cooking and I say a recipe, you could say, oh, the recipe is just theory. We don't need theory. Then how are you going to cook the preparation? You need the recipe. Does that make sense? So we try to make it practical and understandable to the person that we're dealing with. Does that work?
I'm actually also wondering, because sometimes when we are repeating things from the Prabhupada's books, then as Bhakti Vikas Maharaj once said in a summer camp in Croatia, then he was giving the seminar called Dinosaur in Krishna Consciousness. He was saying that he's repeating the same thing from his beginning of Krishna Consciousness, but now he's called old-fashioned and new ideas are coming around, and then people... Especially when
now, what are these new ideas? What does new mean? Krishna, is he ever youthful or not? And did he get the benediction that his teachings are ever fresh or not? And then let us take these so-called quote unquote new ideas. They're here today. Are they still here next year? After 6 months? After 3 months? Even after 1 week, are they still around? So therefore, he's talking the fresh things and everybody else is talking this old, already been chewed by somebody else before. You know, it's like nowadays people are talking, you know, about this health food and the drinks and the this and that and all that. And it, like, it's this newest, latest thing. My grandmother back in the 60s, she had this monster machine that she would make carrot juice out of. Right? You know, it was a big, big machine, took a lot of things to get it done, not so easy like now. And she would make this carrot juice and hand me a glass of that. So I was 8 years old. I'm sitting here with a glass of carrot juice. And you just chug it, you just drink it, knock it back like that? No, you take a sip, you have to chew it. Therefore, chew your liquids, drink your solids. I haven't known that since I'm 8. And so then now everybody's talking about the new latest thing here in 2020, and it's stuff that I've been doing since I was 8 years old. Give me a break here. Whatever they're talking that's new, what's new? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. If people talk about that, they say, oh, that's archaic. What about, hanging out, with friends or family or making money? They've been doing that since time immemorial. You know, so, how come that's not archaic? Why is it stuff that's in Bhagavad Gita? That's archaic. So that's called kripana. Kripana means miser. So that's all. It's just they've gotten this idea it has to be new, fresh, different, because it's about being entertained rather than being thoughtful. They don't want to use their brains, so like that. Maybe the way he uses examples, he could adjust examples, but the message doesn't change. Whatever he's been saying since the 60s, 70s, it's the same thing now. Just maybe you change your example. You have to make the example for the audience. That's all. Then they can relate to it. The point is that if you're saying things from the Gita, and the audience can't relate to it, means you haven't found the particular kind of, vocabulary or language or the tone of voice or examples that they can appreciate and understand. And so you have to find something else that'll have something that they can relate to. That makes it fresh for them, but the knowledge itself is eternal. Krishna is eternal. So the Vedic culture works just as good today as it did any other time. It's just a matter of we're the ones that are unqualified. The laws of gravity still works today, whether you are if you have a PhD or you don't, gravity still works. It worked 1,000 years ago. Come back in 1,000 years, it'll still be working. Water's wet, fire's hot, sugar's sweet. You know, like that. So, wheels go around in a circle. They don't change. So that's the whole thing. People talk about it as something different, new, fresh. What is different? Even the clothes, it's the same old things. Now it's not as popular, but, you go back like 5 years, on the pants, you have those cargo pants with those big pockets, on the thighs, That's military. The military has been using those for probably, God only knows, like 50, 60, 80 years. And suddenly that's the new thing. So what's the difference? It's like previously when you grew up and your suit jacket was a little bit too tight and all that, you got a new one. Now they wear it and say it's fashion. It's so tight, it actually pulls and pulls the fabric out of shape. And it's called fashion. But give it a couple of years and it'll be baggy. So it's the same things that have always been there. No change. I was seeing some old pictures of just crowds from, 100 years ago or more. A little less, a little more. But we're used to seeing them in black and white. So we think, oh, those are old things. But there's some new technique where you can take and they can actually put color to them. Because you know what the fabric is, you know what it is, you know what the things are. And they can tell somehow or another, some computer thing, they can make it colored. And as soon as you make it colored, you'll see that these guys were up to date in fashion 100 years ago. They're wearing what we're wearing now, and it's not better. Really far out. So this whole idea is, it's just a matter of uniqueness. I'm special. I'm different. Therefore, whatever's happened before doesn't apply to me because I'm so unique in the universe. I'm so special. But what they don't understand is the modes of nature are, they're the ones that are controlling it. So the modes of nature make you think like that when actually you're not just an ordinary guy like everybody else. It's just a matter of time before, it moves on, As the acharyas say, everybody gets their 15 minutes of fame. Does that make sense? So what he's saying is just as fresh and all that. He may find they have to change. I noticed from 2010, examples I used before that had been using for 20, 30 years, I couldn't use anymore. People didn't know what I was talking about because there's this idea, it's new and fresh, but what you have to understand is, oh, we're up to date. No, it's not that you're up to date. You are exposed to whatever Google guru decides you're going to be exposed to. The algorithms, whatever you've looked up, they just give you the same thing and they project and this and that. So if you have 10 people look something up on the internet, they're going to get 10 different things. And then they're saying, everyone thinks they're the one that's up to date. But it's just whatever you're into, that's what it's going to give you. So there is no common background. Like before, everybody read the same books, had the same kind of experiences, so you had a common culture. Now, no one has the same experiences. And so, therefore, they can't relate to each other. Does that make sense? So Bikash Maharaj shouldn't worry that it's archaic and this and that. He should just consider maybe use a different example. Because like I said, 10 years ago, I found whatever. The year before, I could say it. Everybody understood. And then from that year, I don't know what happened. It's just no one understood. I had to give different examples. Does that make sense?
I'm also wondering, because we as rank and general devotees, simple devotees, or not rank devotees, we are saying something. But then on the other hand, you have so-called leaders. I recently just heard that there is a seminar called How to Mess Up Your Life with Varnasham. Then that thing.
Yeah, oh, but it's just like,
who is this?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given a point. He said that one has to be careful that one doesn't become what's called a Kali Chela. Right? Kali is the, you know, the lord of Kali Yuga, you know, like you have, you know, Kali Raj. And Chela means his assistant. So since Srila Prabhupada, all the previous acharyas, all the Vedic literature, Krishna himself, you know, they all talk about the Vedic system, Varnashram. They all follow the Vedic system and they all recommend it. So if you want to be an assistant to Kali Raj and say that how you mess your life up with Varnashram, you can't mess yourself. No one's messed up their life without Varnashram. All the karmis have the perfect life and the devotees had a perfect life, but they wanted to make it better, so they came to Krishna consciousness. So then they were told about Varnashram. They tried that, and then their life became worse and all that. So they just should go back to that karmic lifestyle they had before, because it was so fabulous, because everybody in the material world, all the karmis, they're all so wonderfully happy, especially if they're from first world. You have to remember, yes, if you're from third world or fifth world, who actually kind of follow Varnashram anyway, you know, don't say it too loudly. That they're the ones that are suffering, but the first world, yes, the wasp, he is enjoying like anything. Isn't it? Isn't that perfect? That's why no wasps join, Krishna consciousness. It's always people from the third world and fifth world and, you know, all these other ethnicities that they just can't get it together. They just can't enjoy it like the first world. And so that's why they've taken the Krishna consciousness, and then their life's bad, and then they take up Varnashram, and then it gets worse. So in other words, if you don't know Varnashram, why are you talking about it? If you can't follow it, then just because you can't follow it doesn't mean it's wrong. The reason people have trouble following Varnashram, because they want to maintain their attitude of passion and ignorance. They don't want to perform duties. They don't want to regulate their life that's useful to Krishna. They only want to regulate their life, just like I go into places that, like, let's say, have you ever taken lunch with a vegan? They can't not talk about being vegan. Anything you eat, if it's not in line, or let's take a natural food freak, you know, health food fanatic. Anything you eat, it's wrong. So in the same way, so their health is bad. They can't get it together. Hey, okay, leave it. But why do you have to present this on? You can't figure out Varnashram. You can't make it work. Like that, don't push it on others, especially when the acharya said. Otherwise, you risk, you know, the position of basically, you know, as in Western terms, you become anatta. You become useless, disconnected. So the point is Varnashram's there. Varnashram worked perfectly. The whole world still works on Varnashram. I have explained Varnashram to actually government level PhDs who work with what's it called? You know, in Europe? The collective of all the countries? EC. Right? The European community. They work on government platforms and committees there and actually work with policy and that for the EC. I've explained to them, because they're asking how is it people this and we're not relating and how to get it. And I explained to them how, what are the positions in Varnashram, how they work, what each one does and what they relate, what's their mentality, what it should be. And afterwards, the one says, I'm actually surprised. I understand what you're talking about. And they could see how it practically worked. So these are real leaders. So therefore, if we're going to follow Prabhupada to be a real leader, you have to follow Prabhupada. If not, you can do whatever the hell you want. But don't claim you're a follower of Srila Prabhupada.
So in other words, I'm not going to be kind on this one at all. Anyone who attacks, if it means you point out how to be careful not to mess your life up with Varnashram, that I could understand. People get too fanatic. They overemphasize the rule that's not so important and an important rule that they don't emphasize. That I can understand. But if it's about Varnashram will mess up your life, I have zero sentiment for that kind of person. Zero. We either follow the Acharya or step out of the way. Srila Prabhupada made the point that this movement will go on. It will be successful. It's just a matter of who gets the credit. At the beginning of Gita, Krishna already pointed out, I've already killed everybody on this battlefield. The only ones that are left are going to be the Pandavas and I think two other people. Three other people, I think. That's it. Now, Arjuna can either, you know, follow his program and pack up and go off to the forest and pretend he's a Brahmin. And the battle will happen anyway and everybody will die that's supposed to die. Or he can perform his duties and he'll get the credit. So the point is, this movement will go on and since Varnashram is an important part. Bhakti Vinod Thakur told that to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One of his main things was to reestablish Varnashram. It's one of the points Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was there. Srila Prabhupada is the same. Every second, third purport is talking about Varnashram. And then we'll have the audacity to say, oh, it doesn't apply to us and all that. If you don't understand it, then listen to those who do appreciate it. Right? Don't just think, I don't understand it, so nobody can understand it, therefore we don't need it. That's a useless mentality. Now, to get it very clearly expressed and this and that. But the point is it's always approached in the inductive method. My position and how to go out from there, it's deductive. You have to, it comes down from Krishna. Its purpose is Krishna. Therefore, Varnashram, like we see followed by the Brajbasis and Lord Chaitanya and his associates, that's what we do. We don't have to go further than that. But they'll just say, oh, it's all thrown out. We don't do anything. We chant Hare Krishna. And then they're householders? How does that fit? If you're a Paramahamsa and just chanting means you're not married, you sit under a tree. You know, and then you don't have some weight of maintenance, you don't have some job, you don't have this and that, you don't expect to get, and even if you don't, you're doing, certain, you expect to get paid. So how is all that fitting in? Somehow or another, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna. That's cheating. Straight upfront cheating. Means we have, how you say, because we're attached to the senses, we have imperfect senses. So therefore we don't perceive things properly. So then there's going to be, cheating, right? And then, you know, we're going to make, because we're imperfect, so we're going to make mistakes. We cheat because we don't want people to know that we're idiots, right? So like this, just the, all of them just come around. So the point is we have to take the vision of the Acharyas. You know, it could be that their approach and purpose of doing the seminar was to inspire people how to use and all that. But then why use these kind of titles? You know, why use these kind of titles? It's not intellectually fun. Intellectuals love to say things that sound bad, but they're actually meaning something else. So you have to be very, very careful. That makes sense. Otherwise, we don't go against Varnashram. But at the same time, the idea that Varnashram is going to make Bhakti work, that's not, no. Varnashram maintains you. Devotees are always worried about power and all that. That's Varnashram. This whole focus on Varnashram. But people don't want to be categorized. At the same time as they'll happily categorize everybody else. Oh, you're old fashioned. That's a category. But if he says, oh, you have to be, oh, don't discriminate. That's not proper. But you're discriminating. You know, but the point is you're using your intelligence to tell what's different and what's the same. But the measurement that you're using just doesn't happen to be Krishna conscious, that's all. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful. Now, if someone shows that, yeah, by being fanatically, then you have to be careful. But then they should be showing how to properly use it and how what benefits they're getting from proper use of it. Because otherwise, just the negative is not enough. You have to show us how, basically just engages your nature so that you know what to do, what services to do for Krishna. Otherwise, there's so many things to do, but which ones you can do nicely. And because it's a community, therefore everybody adds in what they do best. Otherwise, why have somebody who can't manage claim to be the manager? Why not have a manager do the management? Why not have the people that know how to deal with money deal with the money? You know, it's just like for cooking, you're going to have the guy who knows how to cook. Or what about driving the car? Oh, you know, why are you discriminating? You know, oh, he can drive the car because he's got a license, you know, but you know, the point is you know, he could be not interested in driving, but this kid over here, he really wants to drive, you know, he's 12 years old and he'd really love to drive your Toyota over there, you know, like that. And so why don't we let him take those nice devotees who give those classes to the airport? You know, don't discriminate, Prabhu. Why are you discriminating? Just because he's 12, now you think he's less than you and all that. You're an adult, so you're special, and he's an idiot because he's 12 years old. Why are you doing that? How do you know that he's not way better than you like that? Maybe last life he was an F1 Formula driver and that, you know, got killed in a crash at Monaco, and that's why now he's only 12 years old. But, you know, before he used to be, you know, Alan Prost or something. You know? So that's the problem, is that the measurement has to be, is it Krishna's or is it Maya's? Another way of applying by the Sanskrit grammar, Maya means to measure. So Maya from Miyate. So are you using Yoga Maya to measure, or are we using Mahamaya? And if we're using Yoga Maya, are we using what our acharyas have said? Or we're just using our own speculation, therefore Mahamaya. So what's the measurement? Prabhupada said, Varnashram, it's not working, make it work. It's just like saying, oh, we have no money for the temple, we went out and tried, so therefore, you know, getting money is not a viable thing, we can't use money, in fact, it's bogus. In fact, you see these boys are working so hard and becoming very grumpy from making money and all that. So we should just throw out the whole idea of making money, and then the temple will go perfectly. Does that make any sense? So if people try to use Varnashram, don't know how to use it, and then they have a bad experience, they shouldn't be the ones pontificating about Varnashram. The people who understand it, how to work, ask those. You don't ask people that don't know how to use something. You don't ask the guy that can't drive how to drive, or the guy that can't cook how to cook. They went to cook, they got burnt, this, they cut themselves with a knife. Oh yeah, this cooking is, you know, bad for you and all that. We should throw it out. Nobody should cook. And what are you going to eat? So that's the thing, is that you either follow Dharma or you'll make it up. So that's your option.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Everything's
okay,
clear.
Okay, very good. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, we've come to the end of the time that's scheduled.
Yes.
There are a few more questions. How do you feel?
I may have to go.
Okay. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for coming. Markandeya Rishi Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for being with us with this class and staying till the end, even though the internet connection was not so good. So thank you very much for doing this seminar for us.
Okay,
and also thank you to all the devotees who participated in this session. Hare Krishna, His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj Ki Jai.
Jai Ho, Hari Bol.